This morning, I've named the talk, Don't Strike the Rock. And I want to talk about this morning about frustration. Frustration, as we journey through life, at the ups and downs, at some point, we're going to be finding ourselves in a moment of frustration. I don't know about you, but sometimes it can last for more than a moment. I'm finding that I hate wearing glasses. I used to love when I had my 20/20 vision and I could see something, you know, miles away in the distance. And now it feels like when I turn my phone on or my tablet on or something like that, I have to put the font size up so I've only got 3 words on my phone or something like that. And it feels like, how am I supposed to do this? And sometimes I used to love being able to just read the small print on things and tell people what it was. Now, you ask you, and sometimes we go to a restaurant as a team, and the light is so dark. Not only have I got my glass out, I have to use my phone as a magnifying glass because you're trying to read the menu, and it's like all the font seems to be getting smaller, and it gets frustrating because you just want to be able to see. And sometimes you go through life, it's frustrating because you find that actually, you can't do what you used to do when you're younger, and so you go through and you find that, you know, I used to be able to do that, and you find that frustrating that the energy is not there, or the attention span is not there, or you get distracted. There's so many things in life that we get distracted by. It just comes our way. Sometimes it's just a moment. Sometimes it's a season. Sometimes it seems like a lifetime, doesn't it? And sometimes you see that frustration in people in a lifetime. So as we go around this word in Numbers 20, and we're just going to start from verse 1, and it says, "And the people of Israel, the whole congregation, came into the wilderness of Zin in the first month, and the people stayed in Kadesh, and Miriam died there and was buried there. Now there was no water for the congregation, and they assembled themselves together against Moses and Aaron. And the people quarreled with Moses and said, 'Would that we had perished when our brothers perished before the Lord. Why have you brought the assembly of the Lord into the wilderness that we should die here, both we and our cattle? And why have you made us come up out of Egypt to bring us to this evil place? It is no place for grain, for figs, for vines, for pomegranates, and there is no water to drink.' Then Moses and Aaron went from the presence of the assembly to the entrance of the tent of meeting and fell on their faces, and the glory of the Lord appeared to them. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, 'Take the staff and assemble the congregation, you and Aaron, your brother, and tell the rock before their eyes to yield its water. So you shall bring water out of the rock for them and give drink to the congregation and their cattle.' And Moses took the staff from before the Lord as he commanded him. Then Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly together before the rock and said to them, 'Hear now, you rebels.'" Nice start of an introduction. If you ever go do a TED talk, that's not probably the best way to start. Hear now, you rebels, shall we bring water for you out of this rock? And Moses lifted up his hand and struck the rock with his staff twice, and water came out abundantly. And the congregation drank and their livestock. And the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, "Because you did not believe in me to uphold me as holy in the eyes of the people of Israel, therefore you shall not bring this assembly into the land that I have given them. These are the waters of Meribah where the people of Israel quarreled with the Lord, and through them he shows himself holy." Here you have a people that, first off, they weren't quarrelsome. They didn't grumble. They weren't frustrated. We know that they were, Joseph brought his family, they went into Egypt, and Egypt at a time, it was a safe haven, it was a safe place that God intended for the nation of Israel to grow in a safe incubator environment. And they grew. And they grew in a safe environment through a period of famine. However, what was once a safe place turned into what you could almost say hell. What was a place of where there was freedom and excitement and potential and the fruits were all there turned into slavery and hardship. And over time, I don't know about you, but if you just go through a small season of hardship and frustration and being dictated to and hard labor, let alone 400 years worth, you're bound to be a little bit frustrated. And after a while, if the frustration isn't checked, it almost becomes a form of default, isn't it? Your heart changes. It's the default. You're used to hard times, you're used to grumbling, used to moaning. Something does go your way, you grumble, you moan. And for them, it's almost like you can see over time and time and time, the kids, they see their parents grumble, and so they start to see through the lens of the parents. And so when the parents pass away, the next generation, they've got this, they're still going through the same thing, and so they're grumbling and moaning. And if I was in their situation, I would be as well. I wouldn't like to have done the hard labor and the slave and being beaten and all that stuff that they had to endure and go through. But the condition of the heart changed. It came ingrained in society, in their culture, in their way of thinking. And naturally, anyone in that time, you would understand this heritage would be crying out to God, you know, get us out of this. How often do we do that? Even if it's out of a simple traffic jam, get us out of this. Because we're frustrated, time's valuable, we want to be moving on. And we've said, so God, will you just change those traffic lights, even though you have to wait 30 seconds? No, those 30 seconds seem too long, but any situation like, God, would you just get us out of this mess? He hears their cry. And through, we know through Moses and Aaron, because when they go to Pharaoh, it's Aaron who's speaking on behalf of Moses. Moses is there with him, but it's Aaron who's speaking and goes with him because Moses doesn't want to speak because he's afraid of his stutter, his speech, he's embarrassed. And so through them all, God delivers them and takes them through the Red Sea and into this wilderness. And bear in mind, we have to remember, they chose to go. No one had a knife to their front saying, to their throat saying, you're going now. They asked for it. They wanted it. They wanted out of the slavery. They wanted out of their situation of the hurt and the pain. They wanted to be free. They didn't want to be slaves. They wanted to know the freedom. They wanted the oppression just to end and to be a nation, to have peace. Everyone wants peace, right? Everyone wants to enjoy life. We all want that. They cry out for it, and it's given to them. And they had this dream of a land flowing with milk and honey and pomegranates and figs and vineyards. And when they walk out, sometimes when you imagine stuff, sometimes when you have dreams about things, you before you even get to it, you imagine what it's going to be like. You have ideas. We have ideas and dreams about our life, about the future plans. When we have a family, you have dreams and visions about your children, what they want going to be and how they're going to grow and what they're going to impact. And we have dreams and ideas of what we want to do with our life and the legacy that we're going to leave. And we have all these dreams and ideas of how we want life to be in a good way. And we all have dreams. And they walk out of Egypt and they find themselves in a wilderness. Life is hard sometimes. That used to be my email address. Growing up, it was my sense of humor, fighting my dyslexia, because life was hard with communicating. So my email address was james7lifeshard@hotmail.com or whatever. And that was my email address, because life was hard. And so by my bit of sense of humor, that was my email address before my friends worked out my password, signed me up to some few dodgy stuffs, and so I had to delete it and get rid of it because they did it for an April Fool's joke. And even that was hard. And so that was my email address, james7lifeshard@hotmail.com. And so it's probably there somewhere in the ether. But life is hard, isn't it? And sometimes what we dream about, what we expect it to be, the hopes and desires that we're just like, I want that. And we find ourselves staring at a wilderness where it's just sand dunes. Where's the figs? Where's the pomegranates? Where's the vines with the grapes to make the wine? Where are the fields to make the fresh bread? Do you ever walk into the supermarkets or places and walk past the bakery and you smell the nice fresh bread? You can smell tiger bread from a mile away. It's always a downfall. You try to avoid it, don't you? But you smell it from across the store and you find yourself going, okay. You go, Where's the taste? And you're just left there with sand dunes and baking hot days and freezing cold nights. I thought we'd be better off. And when our expectations and when our dreams and when our ideas and our way of thinking don't line up with reality, we get discouraged, we get grumbling starts to murmur. I thought this was going to be better. And it's really easy, isn't it, how quickly we forget what the past is like. We forget that the past was hard and we've cried out. And even though God's brought you out and he's bringing you into something better, bear in mind the devil didn't make the wilderness. The wilderness was there. They had to travel through it to get to the promised land. Sometimes we go through life and we're praying, God, would you get us out of this? And God gets us out of this. And even though we haven't reached the final destination, because we have to walk through a period of hard time, we're trying to curse the devil. We're trying to cast him out. Curse the devil, cast the devil out. Excuse me. We're trying to, you know, we're rebuking. We're doing all this spiritual warfare. And God's simply saying, he's not in it. You just have to go through this season to get to where you want to go. It's coming. It's there. We have a society that we look up to people who are successful and we want to be like them, whether it's a musician or a businessman or, you know, whatever it may be. And sometimes we expect to just be able to walk into that promotion or something without having to upscale ourselves, without having to learn. And so when you get that promotion that you want, because you haven't taken the time to learn the skills and the things that you need to walk into the job, you find the job frustrating because it's harder than what you expected. The problems come your way because everything really looks rosy, doesn't it? Oh, the managers do this, or I just want my own company, I just want this, I want that. It looks fantastic, but we don't realise that promotion equals problems. That's why the people, when you get to the supervisor, the problems go up. The manager, the problems go up. And then if you own your own business, the problems get up even more, because not only with that, you have to worry about people's wages, healthcare, all those stuff. You don't realise. Promotion means you're problem solving, and the way you have to deal with people has to grow. You have to not only be good at what you do, you have to be able to solve the problems. If you don't want to solve problems, if you want an easy life, stay really low and don't grumble, because problems go up. trying to fix them, it goes down because the bosses say, well, you need to do this, you need to do that. But problems always go up. That's why you get paid. That's why managers and bosses and supervisors are supposed to get paid the way they do, because they're supposed to help the environment and the people underneath, the workers, do their job by fixing, solving their issues and going from there. You get paid for solving the issues. And so when we walk into that, into those promotions, or we will go into that season and we find it hard, and it's like, well, have we learnt how to deal with that? Have we learnt new techniques? Have we learnt new skills? I started watching a documentary with John Williams, you know, the composer, and his music's fantastic. And you watch it and you think, the hours that he took simply playing the chords and the keys on the piano, even before he started composing, learning, okay, how many hours did he spend actually going, okay, playing each and learning how to play the piano, even before he started composing? And even composing, that's the next stage, because you have to learn not just the piano, but it's all different things, and then you've got the next stage above that. The hours and hours and hours of sacrifice that people have to do, whether it's in sport or whatever it is, whether it's art or whether it's in teaching or whether it's communication, whatever it is, the hours that people have to sacrifice in order to gain the knowledge that they do, in order to get to where they want to be, it's a sacrifice. Some people have sacrificed so much to get to where they need to be that although we want to be where they are, we're not willing to pay the price for it. And we resent them for it because we can't be bothered. And we try to put excuses around it. And actually, it's just an excuse. We can't be bothered. We're not willing to put in the time. Israel, they go through and they're on a journey. And because they didn't expect, because it wasn't there laid out for them, they get frustrated and they grow and grumbling and groaning. And how many times through the book, or you know, through Exodus, Leviticus, all those books, you see the grumblings and the moanings, and you're thinking, really? You've been delivered from the plagues. You've walked through a Red Sea. You've seen the Egyptian army totally destroyed before your eyes. You're on a journey, and yet you're still grumbling. You're still questioning if there's a God, even though you've seen it firsthand. And when they do go to the promised land, it's right before their eyes. They can see it. The spies go in and come back. And they get disgruntled and they get frustrated because we have to fight for it. There's opposition. I might have to work for, I can't just walk in and just take the land. I wonder how many times people, including ourselves, God's called us to do something and we've walked up to it, we've looked at it, we might have even just opened the door slightly and there's been a little bit of opposition. And so just close that door, taking a step back because you didn't want the fight. And so you live in a season of frustration because you got so close, but because you got disgruntled, you live in a season of frustration. How many people do you know still live, even into their old age, of that season of frustration? I could have been something. I could have done that. I could have been this guy. And they blame every single thing that they can, because in frustration and disappointment, if unleft unchecked, it goes down to the heart. It's a heart issue. Even though the frustration doesn't start on the outside, the frustration starts on the inside, being triggered or whatever by what's our situation and our circumstances around us. It triggers something inside us and we get frustrated in whatever way, shape or form that is. And instead of addressing that and going, why am I getting frustrated? Why am I being discouraged? Why am I disappointed? It goes down into frustration and anger, and it just spools out instead of recognizing that. And so people don't want to blame themselves, and so they blame everything. It's not my fault. Even though I didn't prepare for the exam, even though I thought I could just walk into it and I failed the exam, well, it wasn't my fault. I should have just been able to complete it. That's what I did with my GCSEs. I spent 10 minutes total studying for my GCSEs. I opened up my textbooks and I was like, God, if I don't know it now, I'm not going to. Close them. Gaming. I told my French teacher, I'm still learning English, let alone French. And correct me if I'm wrong, all I learned in French was mainly je ne comprends pas, and I think that's I do not understand. Is that right? Yep. Yeah. I learned that phrase. So when the teacher looked at me, I went, je ne comprends pas. And that was my... And sometimes you just give up and you think, do you know... And sometimes I get frustrated looking at myself back in high school, but simply because I didn't, at that time, no one told me the rules, I didn't understand. But sometimes it's only in hindsight when you look back and go, that's why. I wonder, are there things that God's brought you through, but you weren't willing to put the effort in? Someone sent you a note, or someone spoke a bad word, or there's a bit of frustration, a bit of pushback, so you gave up. Sometimes we have to take the ownership over our frustration, judging it, realize, actually, I did that. I know a situation is not here, just disclaimer, it wasn't here. It was Mother's Day, and this woman went, do you know what? All my kids don't come and visit me anymore. Not even my grandkids. And that was her story. She forgot the part about how many a time she said, I wish you weren't born. She forgot the part that she didn't tell people how she belittled her children, that they would come in to the church crying their eyes out. My mum called me a waste of space. My mum didn't want me. My mum... is disappointment to me. One of them got 5 straight A's. Wasn't good enough. Nothing was good enough. But then Mother's Day, when they're old and they're grown up, my kids don't come to see me. I'm not surprised. You can't sow division and anger and hatred and then reap respect. There's only so long you can bully someone or say to your kids, you know, I hate you, before one day they're tall and they're big and they're strong as you, and they say, come on, I dare you, say that one more time. I dare you. There's only so long you can project the frustration onto other people. Other people are so cowardly that they'll abuse other people, they'll hit their wives, the wives will abuse their husbands because they want to take it out on everything else apart from themselves. And if that's you this morning, that stops now. You don't abuse your wife, you don't abuse your husband. I'm serious. You don't want me to find out. It's one of those things which part of me goes, I'll quite happily lose my job over that. But first and foremost, she might be your wife, but that is God's daughter. That might be your husband, but that is God's son. You think things aren't going your way? Does the Bible say that God answers all prayers? Are you sure about that? God says, men, if you're not treating your wives right, I turn a deaf ear. I don't hear you. I don't hear your prayers. Sort your house out. Are there areas in your life that you have to sort out? Don't get me wrong, he hears them. But he might say, well, I'm not answering that yet. You need to sort that out. Does our character and the way we live reflect the relationship that we have with God? Does it outwork? Does it move? Is it a heart issue that has to change? And they're there and they're grumbling and I'm not surprised God met with Moses face to face. It's the sort of job you'd need that, wouldn't you? If you're going through life and you've got a whole, how many thousands, a hundred or millions of people just all grumbling and they take their anger and their frustration out on one guy, Moses. It's Moses' fault. It's your fault. You led us out. What, because the past was better than it is now? You're saying something stupid. You'd rather go back to Egypt and die at a young age than rather than live at... When you're frustrated, you say stupid things. You act stupidly. You do stupid. You just don't think sometimes, do you? Because you get frustrated. You just react out of the emotions and it's there. And we've all done it. Some of you are smirking. You're like, okay, I won't make eye contact. We've all done it. And then you have the Moses. We have to bear in mind that Moses is a good leader. But we have to remind ourselves that potentially he's confused. A Hebrew grown in a Egyptian palace with Egyptian education, but not really Egyptian, looks different, learns the language, but it's not really him, kills someone, has to flee. So I wonder if he's trying to work out who he is, his identity. I have to flee from the past. I can't go back home. And he's there in the wilderness with a people who are, he's supposed to be leading, and supposed to be family, who are resenting him. What do you do when you're leading and the people around you just hate you? Even though you haven't asked them to be where you are, you've been anointed and called by God for that situation to bring those people out. And yet they're moaning against you. You didn't force them. You say, we're going this way. God's called me. If you want to go, let's go. They're moaning at Moses and blaming him, even though it was their choice to walk out. They could have stayed if they wanted to. And Moses is there and he's working through the frustration. And if you're in that situation, I wonder, sometimes you just need me to... I'm not surprised he met with God face to face time and time and time again, because you'd need that when you go walking through with those sort of people, wouldn't you? However, can you be called and anointed and still find and still accept that sometimes God calls you to a hard place? In the company or where you're working, if the culture's hard, if the place is hard, can you still be called and anointed to go in every single day and to keep your integrity, to keep your characters, to show godly values, to not steal, to not gossip, to not grumble, to do a good day's labour and not clock on late and clock off early, to be honourable with sick pay, be honourable with... If you're self-employed, the taxes and nationalities, all that sort of stuff, can he trust you? to be in a hard place. Because sometimes God assigns you to people who you might not like, they might not like you, and not nice people. Does that mean that you're not assigned? Does it mean that you're not called for that time? Of course it doesn't mean that. He wants you to be there. But sometimes we have to journey through those tough times. But sometimes when you're going through those tough times, he's saying, I need you to develop your character. I need you to grow. I need you to seek me. I need you to be able to learn, develop new skills. I need you to do this. I want you to get closer to me. I need you to be able to hear my voice. I need you to be able to hear where I'm guiding you, to be able to see. I need you to bring your godly values into the workplace where you are. Even if people are grumbling about you, even if people are moaning about you, the way you live and your actions will silence all the haters. People might be saying stuff about you, but can the people around you and the management say, well, I can trust them? You might say this, but actually, they're kind, they're nice, they're encouraging, they're not gossiping. I can trust them with the stock that I have. I can trust them with the people around and underneath. They look after them, they care for them. They don't abuse their power. They don't belittle people. They're lifting people up, they're training people, they're encouraging people, they're investing in people. Because when God puts you in a position where you have influence, you need to be able to love the people underneath you. And if you love people, whether it's workplaces, whether it's families, you're giving them permission to hurt you. And Moses is journeying and he's leading and he's trying to love the people, but in that space of being exposed, he's exposed to the environments of being hurt, being frustrated, being angry. And there's a difference in strength. Sometimes people just say, do you know what? I gave that person a good mouthful. I just told them like it is. Well, anyone can do that. Anyone can turn around and shout out and say bad stuff and belittle people and put people down. We've all done it. But can you know who you are, be comfortable in who you are, and realize even though what the people are saying, that's coming out of their own hurt, that's coming out of their own pain, and sometimes to say, do you know what? I'm going to take the hit out here, I'm going to keep my mouth shut, and I'm going to hold my peace. I don't need to defend myself. Some people waste their whole lives trying to defend themselves. This person said this, this person said that, that person said that, and you're trying to go around. But when you do that, and when you're trying to people please, and you're trying to get people's acceptance, you're always having to prove to people why the other person was wrong and you were right. You're always trying to gather people, say, no, you need to believe my story. You need to believe what I'm telling you. You need to do this. I was right. I was the victim. I was doing that. And we change the story and we all bit all different bits and pieces because we want people to accept our version because we have to get the people's acceptance around us. And that's one of the things that is Moses' downfall here in this text. What did God tell him to do? Take the staff, gather the assembly, and speak to the rock. Why is that important? Why is being able to listen to God and what he's trying to do important? Because Moses gathers the assembly. Instead of them being silent, he turns around and says, you rebels. And out of frustration, he strikes the rock. And God, in his graciousness, still works the miracle because he loves the people who hate him. Because he still cares for the people who are disgruntled about him. But he's angry with Moses because in that moment, the people aren't thinking, wow, the rock is spurting water. They're going, do you hear what he's just called me? He just called us a rebel. You might spurt off your mouth and give as good as you get. But sometimes in doing so, you take the glory away from God. The people go away thinking, what? Their attention is taken off of God onto Moses striking. And sometimes we strike things and we hit things and we lash out because we're in pain, because we're hurting. And actually, God hasn't said, I want you to hurt that person. I want you to get back at that person. But because we think we are angry, we think God is angry. And we want God to be on our side. And we hope God's on our side. And we justify ourselves in our actions and the way we should do things and why we should behave in that certain way because, you know, that person shouldn't speak to me in that tone of voice. I shouldn't be treated like that. And you might be right. You shouldn't be spoken to. You shouldn't have been treated in that way. But God didn't tell you to lash out. And out of our hurt and out of our pain, we lash out at people. We lash out at things and we try and say, you know, God's on our side and God's on no one's side apart from his own. God is God. He's only on his side. It's not our will be done, it's God's will be done. What does it say? Ultimate vengeance is his. I'm not saying we shouldn't speak up for ourselves. We shouldn't stand up for things that are right and, we shouldn't stand up against things that are wrong and speak truth into them. We should do, and God calls us up to that. God calls us to defend the case of the widow. Some people say, I don't believe in religion or our relationship with God, but the Bible says that true religion is an attitude, a behavior that loves God and loves our neighbor. So we defend the case of the widow. We look after the orphan. We look after the poor. We look after the needy because we show God's love to the people around us. Yes, we have a relationship, but we're to love other people just as much as we love God. In your behavior, in your reactions, are you loving other people just as much as you love God? Are you striking out at things? Are you in a situation that, in circumstances that you're striking out at things and actually God's saying, I want you to hold your peace? What did Moses and Aaron do? They went to the tent of meeting and they fell on their faces before God. And they waited and they listened to what God had to say. Frustration, there's many. You can talk about frustration and different types of frustration all day long about the different types and forms and how it works and all that. But ultimately, it comes down to it's a heart issue. Is it changing our behaviour with the work colleagues instead of just saying to our work colleagues, "You're rubbish. You suck. You shouldn't be doing that," and just constantly battering and heads. Is it a case of turning the culture and saying, actually, God's asked me to not push people down, but to lift people up, to encourage, to build up, to encourage their skills? And so instead of changing the language and saying, I'm not going to have tough conversations all the time and argumentative conversations, I'm going to try and help people develop. And so instead of saying to people, you suck, and say, look, someone gave me a bit of advice. Can I help you? And show them how to do something in a loving way. If you're a boss and you've got people underneath you, instead of just shouting at them all the time, you suck, you're doing it wrong, how about going down, showing them how to do it and say, look, I was there one time, I know it's frustration, but this might help you out a little bit, changing the language, because whatever you sow, you reap. There might be times where in companies and things you might have to let people go because they don't learn. And sometimes you have to have a time frame of, look, I need to, in this time frame, I need you to, but we want to see this. We want to see you grow. We need to see you get developed. And this might have happened to you. Someone sat you down and said, look, we want you here. We love you here. We want you to grow. We want you to develop, but we need you to do this. You need to do this, not only to help yourself, but to help the company and to move forward. And when you don't do that, when you don't listen, you think, I'm going to do my own thing. I'm going to do it my way. And you do it that way, and you don't go down that way, then you find, why did I get fired? I was the best thing for that company. I kept that company up and running. 3-5 years down the line, the company's doing fine. Sometimes it's a heart issue. Are we real with ourselves? Are you real with yourself? Are there things that you might need to address with people, but instead of in vindictive and an angry way, but go back and say, actually, I was wrong. Actually, can I help you with that? I'm sorry for my behavior. I wonder if there's a change of heart. The changes start with us. Are you spending so much time telling everyone else about your hurt and your pain, but you're not going to God about it? And sometimes I've been going through situations and circumstances of pain and frustration, and God has said one word in my quiet time, and that pain and frustration, although the frustration was still there, I had peace. I didn't need to tell everyone around me about the frustrations that are going through. I wonder what areas in our life that God is just sometimes saying, I just want you to do a reality check on that, because sometimes frustration is birthed from God in the sense that he's called you to something. He wants you to do something, but you've been doing your own thing. And sometimes he stirs us up, brings us to a bit of place of frustration because we're not using the gifts and abilities that he's called us to do. And so sometimes you think, why am I feeling a little bit unsettled? Why am I feeling a little bit uncomfortable? And sometimes it's God just perhaps, is he trying to stir something? Is he trying to get you to check personality or behavior trait, or is he trying to give a check on actually you're not using the gift that I've called you to be using? You've just let it go past, or you got discouraged again and you've given up the fight, and I want you to get back in it. I want you to pick that up again. Because just as he was with Israel, so he's with you every single second of every single day. His fullness of his kingdom, his fullness of his power, the fullness of his presence is with you, encouraging you. Yes, he might correct you in love, but he wants you to succeed. He wants you to go forward. He wants you to excel. He's for you. He's with you. And even when we rebel, he pours out his mercy, he pours out his grace. And he's quick to forgive. And he meets your needs, whether we realize it or not. Everything that we have is his. He gave it to us. His will, his power doesn't change. He's not going to get any better because he's perfect. He's not going to get any worse because he's perfect. God doesn't need to change. Our hearts do. Our wills do. Our perspective needs to change. We need to be align it back into the heart of God. I wonder, what do we need to chat to God about? What do we need to be real with God about? And as the band come back up, perhaps you need to take these moments of just being real with God. saying, God, you know what, I've been frustrated at you, but actually, that was me. I'm frustrated with my relationships, but actually some of it was me. I'm frustrated at my workplace, but if I think about it, not all of it was me, but some of it might have been. I wonder, what do you need to speak to God about this morning?